Blessings, what everyone needs to know. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting.
This is Sam Sebrin from Athens, and you are listening to WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
Every Friday on WGXC from noon until 2, check out the Sugar Shack Jukebox featuring decades of funk, R&B, rock, pop, soul, and much more. That's every Friday on WGXC after the noon headlines until 2 p.m.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC needs you.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. Network.
You've tuned in to All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Accra, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews. Next, the national headlines from Public News Service.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, July the 20th, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. Trump now wants Putin to visit the White House this fall. Also on the Friday rundown, health insurance rates to rise by almost 9% in California. And as a climate crisis reaches zero hour, young people take a stand.
First, our top story, Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats seems stunned to learn during a Q&A that President Trump had invited Russian leader Vladimir Putin to the White House. That from the Huffington Post. They report during a discussion with MSNBC host Andrea Mitchell at the Aspen Security Forum, she announced breaking news that the White House has announced on Twitter that Putin is coming to the White House this fall. The Post reports that Coast asked, "Say that again?" He continued, "Did I hear you?" After another pause, he said, "Okay, that's going to be special." Rates will go up on an average of almost 9% next year for Californians who buy health insurance on the individual market. That's according to projections released Thursday by Covered California, the state insurance marketplace.
That's a smaller increase than many other states, but Peter Lee, executive director of Covered California, says people in the Golden State would have paid much less had the Trump administration left the Affordable Care Act alone.
This rate increase is about double what it should have been and could have been, but for federal policies, in particular, the removal of the penalty for not having insurance coverage.
President Donald Trump maintains the individual mandate violated people's freedoms. Lee adds that despite the changes, competition remains healthy. All 11 health insurers currently serving California will stay, and 96% of consumers still have at least two choices of insurer. I'm Suzanne Potter.
There are two bills pending in the state legislature that would limit substandard policies that may become common now that the feds are allowing so-called skinny insurance plans that are cheaper but have less coverage. Governor Bruce Rauner's announcement of his plans to veto a gun dealer confiscation bill is causing some to accuse him of siding with the gun industry. Here's Eric Gladys.
In the wake of several mass shootings, lawmakers sent Rauner the Gun Dealer Licensing Act in March to help crack down on illegal gun sales. But he vetoed the bill over concerns it would burden smaller gun stores. And even before the revised bill reached his desk, Rauner announced Monday he'll veto it, too, because he believes it doesn't enhance public safety. Kathleen Santis with the Gun Violence Prevention PAC of Illinois disagrees. She says Chicago police recover 7,000 illegal guns a year, and 4,000 are from in-state dealers.
He should want to be saving our children, and he looks like he's choosing to secure the profits of the gun industry rather than keep our community safe.
Just before announcing his veto plans for the licensing bill, Rauner signed two other gun-related measures. One allows confiscation of guns from people if a court deems them dangerous to themselves or others. Another imposes a 72-hour waiting period for all gun purchases in Illinois. I'm Tramell Gomes.
Senator Don Harmon, a Democrat from Oak Park, reworked the gun dealer licensing measure and got a different bill, House Bill 337, through both chambers. Three Arkansas cities are getting a financial boost for projects that will help improve life in their communities. Mary Sherman has our report.
AARP's Community Challenge Grant Program is distributing $1.3 million to help fund 129 projects across the country that will improve safety, transportation, parks, access to housing, and more. The city of Little Rock is among the grant winners here in Arkansas, and Bike and Ped Coordinator John Landusky says they'll be implementing a program that will provide drivers education about their rights and responsibilities to keep bikers and drivers safe.
We're just so excited to get this award. Honestly, we have a pedestrian safety problem in the city of Little Rock, and we have a bicycle safety problem. I'm so happy that we're able to finally couple this community outreach component with some of the new innovations that we're rolling out infrastructure-wise.
Grants will go to the city of Morrilton and the Conway Downtown Partnership. Morrilton will be installing hammock farms around town to provide a safe and relaxing space for residents. And in Conway, a bike corral project will create a safe space for bicyclists to park while they enjoy the downtown area.
This is the second year for the challenge, which encourages fast action projects. This year's deadline for completion is November the 5th. And finally, Eric Tegetthoff tells us young people around the world are standing up this Saturday to tell leaders to act on climate change before it's too late.
The Zero Hour Youth Climate March is being organized by Seattle High School student Jamie Margolin. She'll be leading the main march in Washington, D.C. Sister marches are planned for Seattle and Olympia. Young people involved with the march say they are the ones that will inherit a planet damaged by climate change if something isn't done to stop it. Kendall Kiris is with Zero Hour Seattle Youth.
We are here for asking for change. And so the reason why we have so many marches around the world, basically say that this is what youth are fighting for and we're not going to back down.
The Seattle rally will begin at Garfield Community Center Playfield at 9 a.m. and folks will march at 10:30 a.m. On Thursday, youths across the country held an official lobby day, speaking with elected leaders. Today, they're holding an art and community building event in preparation for the march.
At the Seattle March, a Native American speaker will tell young people about the potential impact on Washington State from British Columbia's proposed Trans Mountain Pipeline. About 20 sister marches are planned across the country. Have a great weekend. I'm Mike Clifford. You've been newsing and cruising with Public News Service. We are member listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
Here is the regional weather forecast for the Hudson Valley and Capital Region.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a sunny Friday with a high near 81 and a low around 54. Should be sunny again Saturday with a high near 77. Then rain is likely Saturday night. There's a 70% chance. Cloudy skies and a low around 61. Sunday, again, there's a 60% chance of showers or possibly a thunderstorm before 2 p.m. Mostly cloudy skies and a high near 76 and a low around 68. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported creative community radio.
Next, we have these reports.
Ellen, I got to, you know, people think I'm heartless and whatever. I know you think that. But we just received a call from someone named Jackie, and her dog is missing. Whoa, what are you doing over there, Ellen?
Where does she live?
In, looks like it's a border collie, and it's in Freehold. Freehold. And he's extremely friendly, and he will come when calling. Guess what his name is? Oh, what a cute name.
What is his name?
Paisano.
Paisano.
So if anybody has seen Paisano, who's been missing since Wednesday, last seen on Wednesday, call 518-813-3429 and talk to Jackie and tell her. Jackie is missing her lovely border collie Paisano. Isn't that sad?
It is sad.
I know.
A black and white
border collie? Yeah, black and white. How'd you know? Is that what they usually
are? Because you mentioned it.
Oh.
I didn't know they came in black and white.
They do. I don't. Well, what do I know? I don't know anything about dogs. You know, I don't really like dogs. But I'm sad about this one.
Yeah, you know? It's a worry.
I do like dogs. I really do. I just think they're a lot of work. You know.
Well, they're worth it.
Really?
Yeah.
You're speaking as a cat person.
I know. Cats can be a pain because they want to open the. You know, they want you to open the door. All the time for them. In, out, in, out.
They think the world revolves around them.
They do.
And dogs don't.
Good morning, and welcome to Good Heavens, your minimum daily requirement of astrological observation and cosmic mythology. This is for July 20th. Gentlemen, and those ladies who have an awareness of their masculine qualities, and gays, and transgenders, and frankly, any human who understands the basic tenets of what we can call masculine energy, we need to talk. War does not work. We've come to it collectively. Aggression, dominance, they don't work. Sure, the cubed power of Mars, plutonium, ended, quote-unquote, World War II. A couple of big bombs showed them who's boss. But really, it wasn't the war to end all wars, because we've been in wars, proxy or otherwise, ever since. And now look at us. Where has it gotten us? What proof does beating them into submission ever work? Nowhere. So as Mars retrogrades into a conjunction with the Moon's south node in Aquarius, and as outer planet Eris stations retrograde today, we together must imagine another way. Of course, we all want peace, but now is the time to look at our individual lives and see how we propagate, promulgate, circulate, instigate, perpetuate, and imitate war. O Sensei, the founder of Aikido, said, "The true Budo, martial Mars art, is the loving protection of all beings. Can we be courageous enough to remember that? Let's do the best we can to choose courage, which leads to love and peace, especially if it's your birthday. The gardening calendar says to turn the compost, and the space calendar shows the asteroid Adam West at its closest approach to Earth. Tune in to Good Heavens tomorrow for another exciting and edifying excursion into the archetypal realm of astrology with Ryan Evans, who can be found at www.ryanevansastrology.com. Good Heavens is produced at the studios of WDRT, Viroqua, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Altogether Now listens for feedback from the public. Anyone who wants to leave a public comment can call 518-291-9492 and leave an audio message up to 3 minutes with any sort of opinion about something you heard on Altogether Now. You can also send emails to info@wgxc.org with opinions about what you hear here.
He come grooving up slowly. He got juju eyeball. He won holy roller. He got hair down to his knee. Got to be a joker. He just do what he please. Shoot me. Shoot me. Shoot. Shoot me. He wear no shoe shine. He got toe jam football. He got monkey finger. He shoot Coca-Cola. He say, I know you.
Labor Talk host and roaming correspondent Willie Terry has been covering the Poor People's Campaign, and he attended the final day of the Poor People's Campaign 40 days of moral and direct action protest rally in Washington, D.C. on June 23rd. He chronicles that day in a 5-part segment from beginning to end. What's next? In those segments, he recorded live voices and sounds from people on the issues of systemic racism, poverty, ecological, workers' rights, and the war on economy. This segment is part 3 of the Poor People's Campaign report on the issue of militarism, the war economy.
Sounds of the Poor People Campaign. Sound of the Poor People Campaign. This is your host, labor host, Willie Terry, roaming labor host in Washington, D.C. at the Poor People Campaign in the streets of Washington, D.C.
Brittany Ramos de Barros. I'm a woman. I'm white. I'm Latina. I'm black. I'm queer. And I'm a combat veteran. As a person existing at the intersections of these identities, I carry a grave conviction in my core that there can be no true economic, racial, gender liberation without addressing the militarism that is strangling the morality and empathy out of our society. For decades, we have been lulled into complacency and inattention as our drones have obliterated weddings, funerals, religious ceremonies, ordinary homes, and ordinary people. It is no mistake that we are waging war in at least 7 countries, and all of them are mostly impoverished, black, brown, and Muslim countries.
Shame!
The same systems that shame and dehumanize us based on our skin color and our documentation status or bank account here want us to believe that those injustices have nothing to do with us. They want us to believe the lie that the precious lives of our soldiers are being spent for the protection of our freedoms. But I spent a year witnessing the bravery and beauty of the Afghan people. Men and women, fathers and mothers, risking their lives and their families to overcome oppressive organizations that we funded and enabled. I cannot forget their faces. This is a racial justice issue. This is a gender justice issue. This is an economic justice issue. We begrudge the poor for the pennies we give them to eat and survive, but cheer for the nearly $600 billion annually we spend on defense. The military-industrial complex is greed weaponized. The United States government is the largest weapons dealer in the world and the largest user of those weapons. From the militarized equipment in which our police forces and federal agencies are clad, to the large percent of current and former soldiers conditioned for war and then hired to occupy our streets to keep peace, is it any wonder that our neighborhoods are treated like combat zones and our neighbors treated like combatants? From the toxic masculinity that objectifies our bodies as nothing more than weapons or toys, to the nationalism that tears us away from the true patriotism that is demanding that America live up to the dream that it has always been. These wars are immoral. Profiting off of killing is immoral. It is time to stand up, and we won't be silent anymore.
Sounds of the Poor People Campaign. Sound of the Poor People Campaign. This is your host, labor host, Willie Terry, roaming labor host in Washington, D.C. at the Poor People Campaign in the streets of Washington, D.C.
Brittany Ramos de Barros. I'm a woman. I'm white. I'm Latina. I'm black. I'm queer. And I'm a combat veteran. As a person existing at the intersections of these identities, I carry a grave conviction in my core that there can be no true economic, racial, gender liberation without addressing the militarism that is strangling the morality and empathy out of our society. For decades, we have been lulled into complacency and inattention as our drones have obliterated weddings, funerals, religious ceremonies, ordinary homes, and ordinary people. It is no mistake that we are waging war in at least 7 countries, and all of them are mostly impoverished black, brown, and Muslim countries.
Shame!
The same systems that shame and dehumanize us based on our skin color and our documentation status or bank account here want us to believe that those injustices have nothing to do with us. They want us to believe the lie that the precious lives of our soldiers are being spent for the protection of our freedoms. But I spent a year witnessing the bravery and beauty of the Afghan people. Men and women, fathers and mothers, risking their lives and their families to overcome oppressive organizations that we funded and enabled. I cannot forget their faces. This is a racial justice issue. This is a gender justice issue. This is an economic justice issue. We begrudge the poor for the pennies we give them to eat and survive, but cheer for the nearly $600 billion annually we spend on defense. The military-industrial complex is literally corporate greed weaponized. The United States government is the largest weapons dealer in the world and the largest user of those weapons. From the militarized equipment in which our police forces and federal agencies are clad, to the large percent of current and former soldiers conditioned for war and then hired to occupy our streets to keep peace, is it any wonder that our neighborhoods are treated like combat zones and our neighbors treated like combatants? From the toxic masculinity that objectifies our bodies as nothing more than weapons or toys, to the nationalism that tears us away from the true patriotism that is demanding that America live up to the dream that it has always been. These wars are immoral. Profiting off of killing is immoral. It is time to stand up, and we won't be silent anymore.
My name is Paul Pumphrey.
And Paul, where are you from?
I was born and raised here in Maryland.
Oh, you're in Maryland? What part of
Yes.
Maryland?
Montgomery County, Maryland. And the prefabbing of the housing for Resurrection City was done right at New Hampshire Avenue in the Beltway.
And this was 50 years ago, right?
That was 50 years ago.
Let them know that. I'm talking to somebody who was there in 1968, Paul.
Correct. And so I went down to volunteer to help prefab the housing. And for about 4 months, as we were prefabbing the housing for Resurrection City, and then once we got the permit to come onto the mall, we loaded up the prefabric housing onto flatbed trucks and drove them down here to Washington, D.C., where there was a crew of people here on the ground at the mall who assembled them. So we did that. And then on the actual day of the march, I was invited to do crowd control. And I was actually assigned at the front of the line. So I was in the line where Mrs. King and Dr. Abernathy and Walter Fauntleroy, Reverend Fauntleroy, and a number of other of the SCLC leadership led the march. And then I'll never forget when we got to the Lincoln Memorial, Peter, Paul, and Mary were performing on the steps. So that was also a glorious day of seeing people carry out Dr. King's dream, and that was a Poor People's Campaign. Now, the interesting point was that he wasn't expecting it to be a one-day event, and that's why we built the housing. His position was that we were going to stay in Washington, D.C. until the U.S. government changed its policy of funding a war to kill poor people in Asia and use that money for the war on poverty that President Johnson had proclaimed earlier. But each year was taking more and more money away from that war on poverty to put it on the war in Vietnam. And Dr. King felt that that was a moral injustice. And that, in fact, one thing that most people don't pay attention to is that when they claim they don't have money to address the issue of affordable housing, when they claim they don't have money to fix up our schools, when they claim they don't have money to reduce the tuition to our public universities, the fact is they do have that money. And they're wasting it in the U.S. military. In fact, from 2009 until 2017, when President Obama left office, the United States put in over 70 military bases in Africa alone. And people were surprised to find the four soldiers getting killed in Niger. As to why were they there? And you got to understand that there's a real reason why the United States is as rich as it is. It's because it's robbing the rest of the world. And they're using U.S. military to carry out this armed robbery. Obviously, we don't have a large amount of mines here anymore. We don't have, we're not extracting a whole lot of oil out of the ground. So how is it that a country that's gotten rid of over 45, 50% of its factories, don't virtually have no mines, stay so rich? It's because we're expropriating and extracting wealth from other parts of the world. And unfortunately, most of that part of the world that is getting ripped off look like you and me. They're either in Africa, they're either in the Caribbean, they're in Latin America, or in Asia. And so there's a real concern that if the people of the United States want our country to be just, then we must speak out against the excessive expenditures of U.S. military. I'll give an example. There was a GAO report done back in 2007 that pointed out that the United States Congress supposedly appropriated money to supply weapons to the newly trained Iraqi army and Iraqi police force. The thing that struck me at first in looking at that report was the assault rifles that we supplied them were AK-47. The United States don't make AK-47s. Russia makes AK-47. Vietnam makes AK-47. China makes AK-47. Eastern Europe makes AK-47. But the U.S. doesn't. Why is the United States using U.S. tax dollars to buy weapons from these countries to send to Iraq? And I believe the reason was, and it came out a little later in the report, is because the intent was never to put those weapons in Iraq in the first place. The only thing I could assume is that they bought those weapons to give to some country or some political force or military force that was illegal for the United States to give weapons to, and that they wouldn't be able to trace those weapons because they were AK-47. The assumption would have been, maybe China gave them the weapons, or maybe Russia gave them the weapons, or whoever. But clearly that people would not assume if a person had AK-47 that they would have had a U.S. issued weapon.
Right. So you're saying the U.S. weapon, purchased weapon, and gave them to an illegal force.
Right. And the reason why I'm saying that was that the audit that they did out of 190,000 AK-47s going to Iraq, they couldn't find 110,000 of them with the ammunition. And one would have thought, we're in a hot war, you're losing 110,000 assault rifles, that should have made alarm bells. But Congress, very calmly, both Democrats and Republicans, voted against those weapons. So it told me they had never intended to move weapons to go to Iraq in the first place, that they were sending them someplace where they legally could not do that. That's the only conclusion I could come to. It's why we weren't buying M-16s to send somewhere, and how could that many weapons disappear with his ammunition? And no one seemed to be concerned about it. Also, 80,000 pistols had disappeared, as well as 135,000 body armor and 90,000 helmets. And the other part of it, and who I felt was in collusion with this, was the press. Because one would assume the press would have been screaming and hollering about this. And they said nothing. I heard one article, report, talking about this. And it caught my attention, and then...
Hi, this is Bill from Bristol, PA. You are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra.
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Accra, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune into transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and all day on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
Desmarchand, a proud supporter of WGXE, is a men's and women's boutique featuring creative and classic clothing, shoes, and accessories. Now presenting our fall collections from European and American designers. Desmarchand.com. Desmarchind.com. On Warren Street in Hudson, New York.
Next, we have these reports.
I'm Philip Green. Amanda Purcell is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Dr. Andrea Cricket Coleman of Clapperick has resigned as Columbia County Coroner, effective July 13th. Coleman held the office since January 1st, less than 8 months. She said her resignation was for, and I quote, personal reasons, end quote. Coleman replaced longtime County Coroner Angelo Nero by beating former Germantown Supervisor Roy Brown in November. Coleman said in a statement, and I quote, "It has been an absolute privilege to have run and become elected here, but mostly a privilege to have been able to serve those that I have, even if for such a short time. I have learned a tremendous amount about the people of Columbia County and am a better person for it," end quote. Coleman will move back to New York City to work as a medical examiner there, she said. Coleman and her husband took up full-time residence in Columbia County in 2014. She was previously employed as a medical examiner at the Dutchess County Medical Examiner's Office in Poughkeepsie. Columbia County Board of Supervisors Chairman Matt Murrell said he will consult with the County Board of Elections and the county attorney to determine next steps. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Rachel Silverstein is reporting for the Times Union. Republican gubernatorial candidate Mark Molinaro, July 16th, accused Governor Andrew Cuomo's reelection team of potentially violating federal privacy laws by recruiting SUNY students who benefited from the Excelsior Scholarship Program to participate in a political ad promoting its benefits. Molinaro said Cuomo's campaign may have violated the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, or FERPA. Molinaro said during a press conference held on the steps of the state capitol, and I quote, "Federal law precludes the sharing of specific private information about students, and the governor's campaign violated that for political benefit. Students who benefit from a scholarship are not playthings in a political campaign. They're just not," end quote. A Cuomo campaign spokesperson said the office obtained the student names from a publicly available list of approximately 20 invitees to the governor's State of the State in January. Those students were invited to the event by school administrators who would have had access to student information. Cuomo's office noted that FERPA regulations bind universities, not state government. The Excelsior Scholarship enables full-time SUNY and CUNY students with household incomes under $100,000 to receive free tuition. Read the full story in the Times Union. Daniel Zuckerman is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The town of Hunter is considering the installation of electric car charging stations. The town board heard a presentation on the proposal July 17th by State Power Authority Senior Business Development Representative Jessica Waldorf. The Hunter Mountain Resort currently has one electrical charging outlet for vehicles. The installation of one station can cost up to $20,000, but the town would be eligible for various state rebate programs, some which would cover 80% of the total cost. And as long as the stations are installed on property open for public use, the town is able to receive the rebates, Waldorf said. Based on population and traffic flow, a town similar to Hunter would typically install two dual-port stations, Waldorf said. Hunter is one of four Greene County towns named to the list of the State Department of Environmental Conservation's Climate Smart Communities, along with Cairo, Jewett, and the village of Catskill. Board member Sean Mahoney said, and I quote, "We see it. People are driving through here with electric vehicles, so we need to support that," end quote. Town board member Dolph Semenza Sr. said many visitors from New York City come to Tannersville in electrical vehicles that have to be charged before their return trip. Hunter would join other municipalities in Greene and Columbia counties that are installing electric charging stations, including Tannersville, Hillsdale, Chatham, and Kinderhook. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Bill Mahoney is reporting for Politico New York. Incumbent Andrew Cuomo leads Democratic primary challenger Cynthia Nixon by 36 points in a Quinnipiac University poll released July 18. Quinnipiac polling analyst Mary Snow said in a statement, and I quote, "New Yorkers say they want a gubernatorial candidate with experience in politics over someone new to it. Democrats, non-white voters, and women in particular lead the charge in that preference," end quote. This is the second straight poll by one of the institutes that regularly surveys New Yorkers in which Cuomo has shown a lead of 35 points or more. In a hypothetical scenario in which all gubernatorial candidates remain on the ballot in November, Cuomo would win with 43% of the vote. Republican Mark Molinaro would receive 23%, and Nixon, running on the Working Families Party line, would get 13%. Third-party candidates Stephanie Miner, Howie Hawkins, and Larry Sharp would divide 6% of the vote. 14% of respondents remain undecided. The poll surveyed 934 voters, including 415 Democrats, from July 12 through 16. Read the full story at Politico New York.
On the July 12th broadcast of the WGXC Afternoon Show, Ellen Thurston and Tom DiPietro spoke with Pamela Badilla about the Badilla family performances at Hudson Hall this weekend.
Oh, look who's here. Here she is.
Yay. Yay. Hi, Pamela.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for inviting me. Thank you. Yes, yes.
How are you? Are you rested?
Are you kidding? Rest doesn't happen till after the show closes, and I begin my hibernation.
Get right on
the. Yeah, I need to be right here. There you go. You hear me?
Oh, yes. Now we hear. Loud and clear.
Yes, I'll get some rest, but not before Sunday.
So,
Pamela Badilla is the busiest woman in Hudson.
There you go.
She really is.
Oh, I know. She takes her group or her spirit of the group throughout the city. Kite's Nest, the library, you name it.
Right.
But now there's a three-day family extravaganza. I got it right here. a celebration of community and culture, the Badilla family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 3 days of theater and music, beginning with, I believe, your Spirit of the River performance, then your daughter, Lady Moon in the Eclipse, and then your son, Young Paris, a.k.a. Milandu.
Yeah, and Milandu, the most remarkable of what's happening is that he's having this great return, a big retour to Hudson, where he grew up most of his youth. And I remember he was grinding, as we say, working so hard, going out there to make people hear that music and listen, and making these little mixtapes, they call it. He even organized what they call the rooftop cipher, so other artists would get together and do their music. And, you know, little by little, he's just been pumping, never stopped working. And so it seems like people realize when you work that hard and you do have a talent, they come behind you. And so he was offered to sign with Roc Nation, and so that's given him a lot of visibility. Oh, yeah. He's touring Africa now, 8 countries. He's been made a chief in one village in Kenya, and he's coming back as chief. I forget the name of it, Mujenge. I forget the exact name, but it means the traveler. So he's seen as a voyaging chief.
Let's go into a little bit about the origins of your group, Diada Diada International Folkloric Theater, and the Badilla family in general, how you came to Hudson, when you came to Hudson.
And how many children there are.
Altogether, there are 10 children. I met my husband in Paris because I was invited by the Grand Ballet d'Afrique Noire to participate in that ensemble. It was the biggest touring company of West African dance, and I was very interested in traditional dance of my heritage. I wanted to know more. I wanted to learn more. And I was invited after having toured the Ivory Coast with a play, a dance drama, which was Les Vengeances de Mami Wata. It was produced and written by a woman, Rosemarie Giraud, who was a very well-known superstar in the world of culture in Ivory Coast. I worked with her in New York, and after a while, they decided to put together a grant to tour Ivory Coast with that play. So I was invited to perform on that tour. I met people there who invited me to come to Paris. They liked my work. I was scared. I wasn't going to go.
Scared of Paris?
I was scared because I didn't speak French. And one of my friends I knew...
And listen to you now.
Now I speak. I teach French now. But I lived in France for 10 years. That makes a big difference. Sure. You go somewhere, you pick up some tools and language for
Mais
me.
Oui.
Absolument. Alan, absolument. Absolument. Oh, nous allons parler bien français parce que j'adore parler.
I do too.
Yeah, I like
she
to hear
speaks it. That French.
I like to hear it.
Melts my heart.
I love it. And also, you know, they're so polite. He could be insulting you. You was on free, but it just like sounds so nice. They're calling you a buffoon, and you're like, merci.
Where'd you go?
But other than them, I went to Paris because of that invitation. Finally, when I was told, you know, if you're afraid to go just because you don't speak French, my friend told me, you'll never go. And that stung me, like, you know, truth is truth. I would not have gone. I would not have had that adventure. I would not have met my husband. We wouldn't be having this conversation probably had I not had the courage to go ahead and, you know, try something new. I went. I was so well received as an individual, and then I was incorporated into the Ballet Theatre in Kodia, where my husband was the choreographer. And at one rehearsal, I was invited to participate. I was dancing. They always have an audience at their rehearsals, which is very good because you ambiance. And these guys were from Congo, and they actually applauded me when I came out and did my representation. I did like an exhibition, like, you know, solo, and they gave me that kind of respect. So I was really very happy, because you never know when you're dancing, you feel good, but then when someone of that culture and you're dancing their dances and they're applauding, that gives you a sense of then I've passed a certain test of cultural, you know, correctness. And then Elombi himself came and gave me a compliment, which gave me more confidence, because he was the choreographer of the Congolese best touring company, and it was like, wow, everybody knew who Elombi was, a great dancer. You could see it, and also he's also their choreographer. So over time, you know, we worked together. I was working here in the United States. I was teaching at the university. I was a professor of African folklore and dance, and I had to come back. So I left, and then I returned to France, and we ended up getting to know each other better, touring together, and we ended up forming a family. He had 3 children when I met him, and then we had eventually 7 more two of whom were born here. But the children were brought up through the dance and through their father's brilliant, beautiful, only original paintings, always celebrating ancestral heritage. You have scenes of people hunting and fishing and people, you know, gathering food from the forest, you know, just showing that we connect with nature. We have to acknowledge a certain humility that means whatever we have, whatever we are, comes from a place that's bigger and greater and far beyond our understanding. And we need to actually, I believe, to stop trying so hard to know everything and to think even remotely that we understand or have a grip on everything, and be the humble people that we used to be and take homage to the natural forces that give us life, give us the vitality, and teach us the dynamics of what community is. It's a certain reciprocal, I have need of what you do, you have need of what I do, and we can share the wealth of all of our efforts by being humble and appreciating each other.
When I first came to Hudson more than 20 years ago.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Yancey Roy at Newsday reports that Governor Andrew Cuomo made a statement July 18th, both seeming like he is being tough on President Donald Trump, but is really not doing much. Cuomo said he would give the state attorney general authority to conduct a criminal inquiry of the Trump Foundation. An ongoing civil lawsuit alleges monetary malfeasance with the charity. Alfonso David, Cuomo's counsel, said in a statement referring to Attorney General Barbara Underwood, and I quote, "At Governor Cuomo's direction, the state stands ready to provide the Attorney General with the appropriate criminal referral on this matter if and when she asks for it," end quote. That comes after calls from Zephyr Teachout, who is running for Attorney General, urging the governor to give the Attorney General's office more power to look into President Donald Trump's foundation. Teachout said, and I quote, "I called for the governor to make a criminal referral over a week ago, and it couldn't come soon enough. I'm glad to see the governor's acting and giving Barbara Underwood the necessary powers," end quote. Others have wondered if a criminal investigation could interfere with the current civil case. Underwood, though, is the one deciding, and she is a bit above the political fray, as she is not on the ballot in November. Underwood aide Amy Spoltalnik said, and I quote, "As our lawsuit against the Trump Foundation illustrates, we intend to hold the foundation and its directors accountable for all violations of state law. We continue to evaluate the evidence to determine what additional actions may be warranted, and will seek a criminal referral from the appropriate state agency as necessary," end quote. Read the full story on the Newsday website. Catherine Bordeaux at Politico reports that 47 U.S. House members have been named to the conference committee that will work out the major differences between the Senate and the House versions of the Farm Bill, with only one area representative on the list. Congressperson Paul Tonko, who represents all of Albany County and parts of Rensselaer County, was named by Nancy Pelosi to the conference committee. Representative John Faso, the Republican of Kinderhook, did not get named by Paul Ryan among Republicans on the committee that will attempt to work out the differences between their versions of H.R. 2, the Agricultural Improvement Act of 2018. Faso has championed a proposal in the House version, though not in the Senate version, adding more requirements to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program for food stamps. Tonko disagrees. He said in a social media post, and I quote, "I am honored to have the opportunity to bring my voice to the table during negotiations of this essential bill. As we go to conference with the Senate, I vow to fight against any and every provision that would force kids to go hungry, undermine environmental protections, weaken clean energy opportunities in rural communities, and rip resources from the hands of our farmers. I look forward to advocating for the programs that matter most for our farmers and families across upstate New York, end quote. The Farm Bill, passed about every 4 years, funds all sorts of nutrition, agricultural, and research programs. The House version, H.R. 2, passed in June 213 to 211, with 20 Republicans joining all the House Democrats against the bill. The Senate bill will also, unlike the House version, legalize industrial hemp production, encourage exports to Cuba, extend the flood insurance program, and allow grazing on some conservation lands. Read the full story at Politico. Bill Mahoney at Politico reports that Governor Andrew Cuomo has worked around campaign donation limits, with a dozen contributors donating $3.1 million in donations since 2015. That is more than $2.5 million, the combined total that has been raised by Cuomo's opponents, Mark Molinaro and Cynthia Nixon. Most of those contributions also donated to Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul and or the New York State Democrat Committee, so Cuomo has much more campaign money amassed than his rivals on his right and left. The Politico names all 12 of Cuomo's top campaign contributors on its website. Can't See Crow II at the Albany Times Union reports that Neil Kelleher, a former chairman of the Rensselaer County Legislature, is now the county's opioid recovery coordinator. County Executive Steve McLaughlin made the announcement July 17th. McLaughlin said, and I quote, "Rensselaer County is in the grip of an epidemic of heroin and opioid addiction that has cost or damaged too many lives and families. As opioid recovery coordinator, Neil will work to expand access to recovery and counseling services available in the community and strengthen existing county support services," end quote. Kelleher, who has served on the board of the Hudson Mohawk Recovery Center for more than two decades and is currently the chair of the Hudson Valley Community College Board of Trustees, will get $30,000 for the part-time post. Read the full story at the Albany Times Union. So that wraps up the WGXE Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXE website, WGXE.org.
Ellen, I got to, you know, people think I'm heartless and whatever. I know you think that. But we just received a call from someone named Jackie. And her dog is missing. Whoa, what are you doing over there, Ellen?
Where does she live?
In, looks like it's a border collie, and it's in Freehold. Freehold. And he's extremely friendly, and he will come when called, and guess what his name is? Oh, what a cute name.
What is his name?
Paisano.
Paisano.
So if anybody has seen Paisano, who's been missing since Wednesday, last seen on Wednesday, call 518-813-3429 and talk to Jackie and tell her. Jackie is missing her lovely border collie Paisano. Isn't that sad?
It is sad.
I know.
Black and white
border collie? Yeah, black and white. How'd you know? Is that what they usually
are? Because you mentioned it.
Oh.
I didn't know they came in black and white.
They do. I don't. Well, I, what do I know? I don't know anything about dogs. You know, I don't really like dogs. But I'm sad about this one.
Yeah, you know? It's a worry.
I do like dogs. I really do. I just think they're a lot of work. You know.
Well, they're worth it.
Really?
Yeah.
You're speaking as a cat person.
I know. Cats can be a pain because they want to open the. You know, they want you to open the door. All the time for them. In, out, in, out.
They think the world revolves around them.
They do.
And dogs don't.
Here is the regional weather forecast for the Hudson Valley and Capital Region.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a sunny Friday with a high near 81 and a low around 54. Should be sunny again Saturday with a high near 77. Then rain is likely Saturday night. There's a 70% chance. Cloudy skies and a low around 61. Sunday, again, there's a 60% chance of showers or possibly a thunderstorm before 2 p.m. Mostly cloudy skies and a high near 76 and a low around 68. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported creative community radio.
Coming up on the WGXC 90.7 FM community program schedule for Friday, July 20th, Tom Rowe starts the day in Acre with the WGXC morning show from 9 to 11 a.m., followed by Frederick Arnold live from the Hudson studio with City Folk from 11 until noon. Later on at 2 o'clock on Hudson Valley Sound, news about local hip-hop artist A.D. The Voice and previews of performances this weekend from Lillian Hornhorse, Young Paris, Lady Moon and the Eclipse, and Body Head. Plus, the Magic Stranger welcomes Blood and Stomach Pills from Rosendale into the WGXC studio. After the news hour at 7 o'clock, in our guest DJ spot this week, an evening with T-Bone, Hudson native Tate Kaza, a.k.a. DJ T-Bone, is back in the studio with a mix of electronic, dance, hip-hop, house, bass, and mashups of all kinds. Followed by the Stoop Rock Radio Takeover with Tall Matt from 9:30 to midnight.
Tune in Transmission Art on the radio Saturday, July 21st, with radio news in the morning from Counterspin at 5 a.m., The Rain Report at 5:35, ARR Audio News at 5:45, The Future of Wet at 6 a.m., Amateur Radio Newsline at 7 a.m., Glenn Hauser's World of Radio at 7:30, and the Radio Survivor Show at 8 a.m. is all about Wave Farm and Wave Farm Radio, 8 a.m. on the Radio Survivor Show, Saturday, July 21st on WGXC. There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, and you can add your own by pressing the Add an Event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org, including some of these events. Friday, July 20th, Jim Snack, the magician, performs at PS21 in Chatham. That's at 1 p.m. in the afternoon. You can also meet the North American Porcupine at the Mud Creek Environmental Learning Center in Ghent, 7 p.m. Friday, July 20th. Learn about the large solitary rodent commonly found in New York. It's mostly nocturnal, so you don't see it so much. This is open to the public. Registration is required at the Mud Creek Environmental Learning Center. There's a link on the WGXC community calendar, 7 p.m. Friday, July 20th, to meet the North American Porcupine in Ghent. Kath Bloom and Frozen Corn, the folk legend Kath Bloom, is performing with Frozen Corn opening at the Root Cellar in Massachusetts, Greenfield, Massachusetts. Friday, July 20th, that's at 7:30 p.m. Rory Block performs part of Rory Block's Gospel and Blues Fest weekend at PS21 in Chatham. That's at 8 p.m. Friday, July 20th. Shannon McNally is at Club Helsinki in Hudson that night, Friday, July 20th. Saturday, July 21st, Cinetype is the workshop at Drop Forge and Tool at 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. with artist Caitlin Parker. Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy has a hikeathon at the Elridge Research Center in Rensselaerville at 10 a.m. Saturday, July 21st. The Empire State Record Fair is at BSP in Kingston Saturday, July 21st from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. with records, books, clothing, and more. BSP in Kingston all day, the Empire State Record Fair. And Hudson River Coffee House in Albany has poetry reading with Emily XYZ, Brendan Lorber, Edwin Torres, and others. 4:39 p.m. is when it starts, Saturday, July 21st.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
This is Echo. You are listening to WJFC Acra, Creative Community Magical Radio.
I'm a road runner, honey.
Thank you.